And so that we're perky early in the morning and early and a full hour earlier, and that's wonderful. And I know the truth. So, as we continue with our ideas on teaching our children, this morning I want to at least mention for a second a lesson that I learned as a boy, okay? We're talking about our hearts. We're talking about teaching about the hope that lies within you. We're teaching about so many things that we're going to teach all that God has to say. And in a very real sense, that our integrity is greater than either our feelings or our desire. Now, I was thinking about a time when, all right, I was 30, and I had become a salesman where my father was my own customer, was my customer. And I don't know about y'all, but you sort of have that little extra when you go in, since this is Dad, okay, I've got an order here. I'm going to get an order here. Dad'll take care of me. And my father offered me, he ran the Tampa store, which was a much bigger store than mine at the time, or that I had run, and he had a flower. He had been doing business with Macy's, where on their displays for the season, they would buy flowers for the entire chain through him, which, that's a big deal. And so he shows me this flower that I have won that is one of the best looking that you've, of exactly what he's looking for. And he says, I need $100,000 of this item, and I need it in 90 days. And so I said, yowie. You know, I was expecting good, but I wasn't expecting that good. But I also know that it takes 120 days to bring something from China in normal fashion. And so I make a phone call to my boss, and I said, this is a got-to thing. No mistakes. Can we do it in 90 days? Yeah, I think we can do it in 90 days, but I'm going to tell you, he says, I have a real problem in saying yes to this because there are no guarantees in business. And he's right. There was no guarantees in business. And so I get off the phone. I have to make a decision right now about whether we're going to accept this order. And I go back to Dad and I said, Dad, you know, as much as I want to take that order, it's not prudent. I said, it takes 120 days normally. You want me to push it 30 days and on an order we've never done on a single thing and a single item that matters so much to you? No, we're going to turn it down. My father smiled. He said, I placed that order a month and a half ago. I was just seeing if you're honest or if you're prudent or whether you're greedy. Dad, you know, what do you do with that? Dad did that to me. And I want to make that point as we go this morning and then look at Eli and his sons. When he is a prophet of God and he is a holy man and he is all that he should be as far as it goes in a certain way. But in this way, no, he's not. Okay, so that now Eli was very old and he had heard that his sons were doing to all Israel and how they lay with the women who served at the doorway of the tent of meeting. And he said to them, why do you do such things? The evil things that I hear from these people. No, my sons, for the report is not good which I hear the Lord's people circulating. If one man sins against another, God will mediate for him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who can intercede? Who can do that? But they would not listen to the voice of their father, for the Lord desired to put them to death. Now, when I go back and I ask you the question, then, as we train up our children, and by the way, I'm not just talking about children. This is the idea of teaching, and any time that we're teaching, that we need to realize there's a heart involved with this thing, and it is not simply to impart knowledge to people. It is the part to impart love, commitment, integrity to God. That's what it's about. Appreciation of who He is and all those things. And so Hophni and Phinehas were immoral, and they were in high positions, and they are a blemish. So much so that God wants to put them to death. And even their good reasoning from their father means nothing to them anymore. And so, do you think that misbehaving children become poor performing adults? Just a question. And I just want us to understand that if there's going to be anyone that's going to do something about that, it's going to be you or parents. And so let's finish with these young men. I call them young. They could have still been old. Then a man of God came to Eli and said to him, "Thus says the Lord, did I not indeed reveal myself to the house of your father when they were in Egypt in bondage to Pharaoh's house? Did I not choose them from all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go up to my altar, to burn incense, to carry an ephod before me? And did I not give to the house of your father all the fire offerings of the sons of Israel? Why do you kick at my sacrifice and at my offering of which I commanded in my dwelling, and honor your sons above me by making yourselves fat with the choicest of every offering of my people of Israel?" Now then, as we see this, it is Eli that is blamed for his children's actions as grown men. And so, there's a lesson in this, you see, that he honored his sons ahead of God. Now then, I don't think anybody thinks like that. Do you think like that? That I love my children? And I do. I love my children. But to say that I honor them before God, I know, not to that level. But the question of the matter is do you love them to the point that you will not bring them into line with what God would say? And that's the point that we're talking about, of which he loved them more than he loves God, because he would not teach them to obey. This is a very hard thing. So he didn't discipline them in the ways of God. And do I think that they did not know the law? I think they knew the law. I think they knew all the stories. I think they know the history, and they know the commitment and all those sort of things. It's that what they want individually is going to be what they seek ahead of what God would have them seek. And he did not train them in the respect for God. So, would you believe this? That only 45% of parents recognize the warning signs and red flags that their children send off, that they're not going in the right direction? Don't you think that's a large number, not to recognize in your own children that they're not going in the direction they ought to be in? I found it to be shocking. That troubles me. And yet as I do that, the story and the warning of these, of what faithful men and women that you're, two faithful men and women, that your children will not be faithful unless you train them to be so. You see, that's the point. It's what are you going to let go, you see, in your household? That's the whole point. What are you going to not look at because that they're in their disobedience or the things that would go that way? What are we going to do, and how far will we go along those lines? And it's so important that we could think that way. It's evident that each child has a different personality and has a different form of learning. There are many forms of learning, and we need to know that. And yet, each one has an affinity in particular one way. It's also evident that every child by definition would rather do what they want to do than do what they should do. Isn't that the definition of a child? That's the definition of me half the time, is that I would rather do what I want to do than do the thing that I must do. Of course, that battle still goes on. How do we then help them choose well the things necessary for a good life and one blessed by God? Well, it is going to be by the very training we're talking about. And so what manner of this training fits the child, and that, listen to this carefully, what manner fits this child versus all children? Think there are some ways to teach certain lessons and be sure that all children would learn that this way, meaning with the particular manner we're using. Okay, and so what we have here is that desire comes into the form, and we need to understand who's susceptible to desire. On one side, the unhealthy coping linked to short-term relief and feeling worse later. That's the one idea, is that I'm not going to do what I should do, and I'm going to risk what the punishment is going to be. And there are children that are that way. They'll take the beating. They'll take the punishment, whatever it may be, and I'm going to, because, you know, I like the now, and I don't really think about the later. The other side is a healthy coping linked to solving problems at feeling good now and later. In other words, that I can do the thing I want now and later, or I may not get to do it at the time I want to do it, but I will still get to do it if I have the right attitude. So which one do we want to promote, and you understand? So that parents then have to answer this question, do I have a child that needs some extra watching or monitoring or whatever the word you want to use is in a particular area? I'm tempted to pick on you, Nathaniel. He needs to choose friends and not like me that pick on him from the pulpit. Anyway, there are those that have those things. And so when we go to teach someone to pray, I'm just talking about a simple thing. Okay. It's a thing that would be common to all of our children, and we would teach our children to pray and how they pray. And you know, as I know, that each child with the same teaching will not pray the same kinds of prayers. Because what's important to them is different. Who they are is different. So, what are the essential aspects of knowledge that cause someone to dedicate themselves to learn and follow? I'm not qualified to answer certain questions. I would be more apt to ask Bill Eccles about music. And there are people who come and they love music. And he's already told me, I want those guys. I want the guys that feel it and want to know over those that will play exactly what the notes say. And so I look for the passion behind the music. It's not just simply learning to press the keys or strum the guitar and those types of things. It is a matter of bringing a song to life and bringing the words of that song, if there are words, as well, that we are affected by it. That's the teaching I'm talking about that becomes passionate within us. What is it that triggers passion within us? And there is no one common thing that triggers passion all the time from everyone and so forth. No, I've got to figure who my child is and then find a way to touch their passion. Is that in the stories of the Bible? There's a guy named T.J. Matthews. Now, this is so old, I can't even tell you. He would stand up and he says, it's in there. Everything from every kind of sin you could ever think of to every good thing that you could ever want. It's in there. It's in the book. It's in this book. Has every situation you can think of, every passion you can think of, every gain and every failing. It's got it all. And he's right. It does. But you see, we have to bring those stories to life. And in that is a point. So I just decided to choose, I'm jumping around a bit, but I want to do this. What if you were going to choose or what do you want to do for the rest of your life? Now, we typically start thinking that way, maybe in high school, but around college age especially, we get into the real work of deciding what our vocation is going to be. And so, if it's time for that to happen, let me just tell you that there is no 18-year-old anywhere, as far as I'm concerned, that is qualified to choose their life's vocation because they don't have enough experience. They haven't tried some things and the things that would go that way. That each person then chooses a subject or subjects that I liked in school, isn't it? This is how we do it. We decide based on a feeling that I will like this for the rest of my life. Well, that's a really good idea, and I think that's a good way of looking at things sometimes. And yet, I like to play golf. When I was in college, or not college, high school actually, I took up golf and got to be relatively good with golf and loved every minute of it. And the idea, well, you know, this doesn't look like it's all that much work. This would be a pretty good way to make a living if you could get good at it. Then I found out that pro golfers hit 1,000 balls a day. 1,000. A round of golf is 72. And even on the days that they go to play a tournament, they hit 1,000 balls. 1,000. I'm sorry. I lack what it takes to be a professional golfer. Therefore, I'm a flogger. That's golf backwards. And so, if we see that and we understand that and we get it, I need to understand what I'm getting into. It's not simply what do I like because I like to play golf, but I don't want to play golf in that kind of format. And so when I learned what it takes to be a professional golfer, I decided, no, that's not what I want to be. And we have those things. A few will go and check out the lifestyle of their chosen vocation before they enter the field, but most will not. They go and they get their studies, and then they go to work in the field, and then they try to find out, and you know what? I really don't like this very much. Because the manner of it is not what they thought it was going to be. And even if you do, the company that you work for may or may not enhance your desire to do this for a living. There are people and companies these days that are using people up. They're churning people, using them beyond what is normal or necessary for their gain. And if you leave, they intend for you to. So the question becomes, should parents decide for their children what should they do as a vocation for their child? Is that something that we should do as a parent? And I want to suggest that this is my feelings, and so you can bust me on this. There is no doubt that parents should have some input into and influence on such an important decision. I think so. But if the child doesn't agree with your good idea, you lose. This is where respect for you and by the child becomes so very important that your advice means something. And that wasn't set for today at the time when they're making a career choice. It was set a long time ago. That your respect of them and their choices should be such that your children will listen to your advice even when it's not what they prefer. Why? Because it's good advice. And if you haven't taught respect by showing respect, you lose. Sorry. So parental training must be viewed then by the trainee as essential to my well-being. That, you see, that's the whole idea. I need to know this. I need to know what you're telling me. And that's what we do in college. We go and we pay money to get the knowledge someone else has to teach me about the thing I need to know. Okay, and we understand. And so when it comes time then to train your children, how do we do this? And as we do, there's some important ideas about training that parents, both parents, need to agree on. And so I've just got a few questions that I'm going to ask here that I'm not trying to answer, but I think need to have an idea. One is learning to obey your parents, a preparation for later learning to obey God. That was so obvious. Is learning to behave properly in the assembly important? It is. For all of you that are trying to train, please, I understand. All of us that have children understand. And we know that that is a process that happens over time. And the frustration within you, I get it. But please, don't get too frustrated. Understand, time will win out on this. And you'll be okay. Is learning to appreciate both the love of God and the justice of God necessary? In other words, an appreciation of the love of God gives me one aspect of things, but then appreciating the justice of God, that God is fair, but He is also firm. And so we need to recognize that. Is the learning that there are many forms of authority outside of self that need to be submitted to? I don't know about most of you, but when I got out of the house, I was really excited about the idea that my parents are no longer going to tell me what to do. And all I did was change that to the checkbook. The parents are now the checkbook, and the checkbook told me what I'm going to do. And I understood I still have a master. You always have a master. Is learning the meaning of sin and its consequences necessary? It is. And that no one would deny that to teach the answers to these questions is part of growing up. And so that this is kind of the way it's going to be. There's a God's way, there's a my way, and then there's a no thanks. And so we need to teach how to make good decisions. So, for parents, our answers may begin authoritatively. Authoritatively enforced, meaning to toddlers, we tell them what to do, and then they're supposed to do that. And there really isn't much reasoning that goes on. This is I tell you, you do it. They're instructed without choice. The choices are offered, making choices simple, minimal. By the way, for any of you that, and we do, we have so many that are young couples, you don't offer children five choices. You offer them this or that. Would you like cereal, or would you like oatmeal, you know, today, or eggs, and let them choose, and they get to choose, but they don't get to choose from anything that they want, because I've seen it done. I want Cheetos, and pitched a fit when they didn't get them, because you asked me what I wanted, and I told you. Toddlers also have the knowledge. Or do they? Do they have the knowledge or right to change your instructions? They are to obey. And so, please, it's not a perfect system. We're not perfect in our instructions. They're not perfect in their obedience. We understand those kinds of things. But there should be a time, and you should see it growing, when you say something and your children obey. And if you're not seeing that, recognize it. In the middle years, there are times with it for outright obedience. But the questions are really, there is more along, what are the instructions? Because each child is different, the mode of question, of instruction could be different. Okay. And that parents cannot let your mode be the only mode you use. Do y'all understand what I mean by that? All right, so my father taught me with discipline. That means is, I got an answer for you, son. I'm going to beat your rear end. And that was the answer for just about everything that I did wrong. Guess what? You got another one coming. And because I was a twin, and because we didn't tell on one another, I took beatings of things that I didn't do as well as the things that I did do because of my sorry brother. But then so did he. And so I have to understand that. And there came to be a situation. But the point is that there's a point where that doesn't make change anymore. There's a time when I need reasoning. I need to understand why you want me to do this. Why this is the right way and that is not the right way. And those things begin as we start in those middle years. And then, and we We hear and learn on our own. We need to understand that. Okay. And our understanding what the motivator of my child is and this child is matters. Whereby the teen years, I think that reasonable answers is the only way. Now I believe we may pull back some privileges, but our reasoning is what's going to change somebody's mind about what they're thinking. So, for children, the answers given you are to be reflected on as instruction not only for accomplishment, but for satisfaction. Let me make the point. It is not simply that I want you to do good, that when you do good, that I would tell you you're good. You are so good when you do that. You did that without being told. You're so good because you thought of that on your own. You did that on your own. You did something good. You see, we have both that side of things as well as the side where you didn't. Learning to do things the right way is not limited to simply task. It's also in manner. Learning to do things with the approval of your peers includes other people's desires and not just your own. You're not here to just please yourself. That's what responsibility is all about. And so there are rules for leading and following. There's always an attitude of right and wrong generated by our manner. And then understanding that your parents monitor these things as well as your compliance to task is good for you. It's what made us who we were. And then when you get out of the nest and you go fly, you're going to find out what your parents didn't teach you that you wish they had. And you see, we get it. So that as parents, our decisions and examples of certain core ideas must be taught and emphasized over long periods of time. And I might even go so far as lifetime. So, when Solomon says this, that the conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether good or evil. Now, when I ask you as a parent, how much does this verse mean to you? What would you then teach your children? What is the most important thing that you can teach your children? Would be what I would say. And so, under those terms, you see, is learning to be truthful and honest part of understanding this? Is learning to honor Jesus on the Lord's Day necessary? How would you teach on materialism versus religious piety? Our society is caught up with materialism. And is caught up with everything is about your job and how well you do it. And that the sense of who we are as a person is being left in the dust. Artistic things are being left. And it is, how much money do you make and what do you have is all there is. And excuse me, that is not what God says. God says who you are is what matters, and those things are what don't matter. And so have you taught your children to appreciate their family, whether it's blood kin or spiritual kin? That I can love beyond the borders of our own home? You don't have to be blood kin? And are you faithful to these things in your own heart so that your example shows that you believe what you're talking about? The fruits of the Spirit, which we already know, are the answer. And as I look at these, did y'all get an allowance? Did y'all get allowances? Okay, I didn't get an allowance. My father said there's only one way you make money, and that's to work. And so that meant that I raked yards and cut grass and sold grit newspapers and shoes and cards and any other kind of thing to make money, but I wasn't given money on a regular basis. And then when I became relatively successful at that, he told me I was making too much money. You'll start buying all your own clothes and all the other essentials that you need. Well, thanks, Dad. You know? So it doesn't matter. I learned something. Would you teach your child to give a portion of his allowance back to God? You think that would be important? How do you teach and monitor self-control? How well do you control impulses? How well do you reward control over lack of control? Let me just say this. This is a warning that I want to give all parents and to each of us. If you have reference and need reference, I want you to go see Justin, because he will corroborate what I'm about to say. We have this sense of a line that you can do this to me and it's okay. And you know what? I'm gonna remain a calm and decent person if you do this to me, and up to the line that you better not cross. But if you cross that line, I'm going to become something you never dreamed of, and that I have the right to do it. And if I hurt you, it's on you. And how far that goes depends on how much the temper of the person has been allowed to go for, and there are those that would kill you if you cross that line. Do we have a line like that? I'm asking. I'm not talking about what does God say right now. I'm talking about, do you have a line that I will put up with a certain amount of stuff, and then if it goes beyond that, I ain't putting up with that. Now, I want to oppose that with another aspect, that there are some times in my children's lives that they pushed me beyond what I will tolerate. And I went a little bit nuts. Or at least they thought so. But I did it for a reason. There's a place you do not go. And I understand that. And they need to know that. There's a place where you need to see what's happening around you, and that you recognize that you're in danger and that you're about to be hurt if you don't do correctly and respond correctly. And that could be these days when in front of a policeman, when he's telling you to do something and you say, you don't have the right to tell me that. Really? I think he does. How do you teach your work ethic, for the responsibility of task and manner? How do you teach confidence without being prideful? How does your child learn to bow before God? Or is it supposed to all be about fun? You see, those are the kinds of questions that I'm talking about when we're going to train the child. I've got something for you here. Dobson, which is somebody, James Dobson, is a psychologist that's read by a lot of people. That your child's first 7 years should prepare him to say at the age of accountability, here am I, send me. Do you have that as a schedule in your parental thinking, that by 7 they already know who God is and that they would yield themselves to God at 7 years old? Now, they're not mature enough to make a lifetime decision in my mind at 7 years old. But when the day comes, if they have it at 7, they'll have it at 12. And if they don't have it, why not? And do you see, this is on a schedule that is much faster than what we thought or what we think. According to Dobson, you see that. And then what kind of training do you think that it takes to get there in 7 years? In light of our current information bombardment, what must you keep from your child to teach godliness? And please don't let me say that, you know, I don't want this ever laid at my feet. I am not saying put your child in a box where he is uninformed and doesn't know how to act because he's just been separated. Because when he is put in those situations, he has no sense of learning. He has no ability to stand. He's tempted by things he doesn't know how to deal with. He's got to be able to know what's happening, but be protected. And so it's a tremendous answer. Dobson also declares that the fifth year of a child's life is the most critical. It is when they move from simple acceptance into thinking for themselves, and what they want means more than what you want for them. Okay, and so the buy it or doubt it attitude comes into them at five. I'm buying. Mom told me, Dad told me that, and I understand. And if they don't understand, I doubt it. I doubt if it's really that way. And parents must have the answers and the recognition of their children, of where they are within me. So I go back and I'm thinking, did Eli have any of this given to him? Think he could see his children and who they were and what was going on? Was he paying attention or was he not paying attention? I've discussed the idea about the hope that lies within you and how to teach that to someone else. I believe that the idea of teaching it to your children opens up a great number of questions as to how. And I think that every household has their own manner. I think that that's because you're individuals as well. But the idea that is so important to me, that I'm trying to make this a complicated situation where we think about it, is how do you ensure that your children will be godly? I'm telling you, it's about the training method. It takes effort that is consistent and meaningful to the student, not just you. And we've discussed the reasonableness of our answers to some degree, but we need to see the crucial importance of being reasonable. Our respect for every person forces that we respect the questions of our children. We teach respect by giving respect, and that our answers must offer insight into our good nature toward God and toward man. Our manner becomes as important as our lesson. So, it is important as well that we see how quickly children come to decision for themselves. If you'd have asked me that five was the time, I would have never believed that. I may not believe that now, but I'm going to make the point. Okay. I also want to say that, you see, if that's the case, please hear me on this. If it's the case that we become, in a real sense, cognizant at 5 years old, you don't have 18 years to get the lessons taught. You've got five to start getting the basics in there. And after that, you understand that it's by seven, okay, they're already at a place to make commitment. Then every piece of training that has to be accepted, okay, before it's learned. Do you understand what I'm saying? I have to embrace the concept, understand what it means, and some of those kinds of things. I don't learn that. I don't make it part of me until I've accepted and understand what it is. And do you understand where I'm teaching and how much teaching that we need? And so I say maybe to that. But I will make the statement, it is accepted by the time it is learned. You have to have already accepted the principle at the time that you learn it. You have to. Okay, how do you teach then a good attitude? How do you teach love of others? And what is the example that you're showing as you teach? You see, are we given double messages? May it never be. And so, I remind us, all Scripture is inspired by God and is profitable. And I don't need to say for reproof and so forth for everything. If I just say it, it's good for everything. And we would do that. Poor behavior only confuses the listener. And I'm talking about as a teacher at this point. Even apologies do not remove the memory of your poor behavior. Therefore, we have to seek to control ourselves and especially when it comes to God. When does that start? Oh, baby, this is one of those questions you can't hardly get away from. It begins today, begins this moment, that I will choose to be what the Lord would have me be, to control myself, even in the light of chaos, even in some poor thinking and poor statements and advertising that I can't stand and all the things that make me crazy. Today is the day of salvation. And I think that God meant that is that as soon as you know and believe that Jesus is the Son of God, that you should become a Christian. And you don't put that decision off, you act upon it. And if you believe that God is who He says He is, if you believe that Jesus died for your sin, that you may live, okay, then you need to be baptized into Christ because God's also said that the way you get into a relationship with me is in baptism. And so let's be baptized. Let's do the thing that needs to be done. Then every other decision becomes what it should be. What would God have me do? And your life will be better. And so will all those that hear of you. Think about these things. And if we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing?